there was so much politics around that lake that when we asked the corporator and the MPs, you know, why don't you do something about it? Why don't you put a cover or a netting? Because during rainy season, the froth was actually, poisonous froth was flying out. You know, they got into politics of, it's not our responsibility. It's, you know, BBMP's responsibility. When we went to BBMP, BBMP said, it's not our responsibility. It's Lake Development Authority's responsibility. When we went to Lake Development Authority, they said, what can we do? People, it's, you know, the companies are putting chemicals into it. What can we do about it? So you see the whole cycle, each one blaming the other, the blame, when the blame mindset came in, it became a big challenge for us, because then we, you know, it blurred the line between us being reporters and us being social activists.
Hello everyone, Ashok here. Thank you for tuning in to this 32nd episode of Indian Startup Stories, a podcast striving to bring out experiences and insights from entrepreneurs across India. Today, our guest is Riti Sinha, leadership coach, independent journalist and founder of Point Blank 7, an independent issue-based digital news portal and a platform for community journalism. In this episode, Riti shares her background, vision and passion being an independent journalist, how community journalism helps people in connecting the stories and the facts, how she manages coaching and training for leadership, educating colleges with multiple initiatives, and much more valuable information for you to take away. So without further ado, let's jump in. Hi, Riti. Thank you for coming on Indian Startup Stories today. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Ashok, for having me over.
My pleasure. Riti, can you please share about your background, academics, and your career experiences so far?
So, Ashok, I was not born in Bangalore, but I was born in Arunachal Pradesh because my dad was in the army. And I grew up in Bangalore. That's where my childhood started. I studied in National Public School in Indiranagar in Bangalore. And further on, I went on to do my engineering. So I am an engineer by default. And that's how I started. And I post-engineering, I worked with Nokia for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I finished my engineering and post that I wanted to do something of my own calling. So I went ahead and I did my journalism. So I enrolled in a postgraduate diploma course with Asian College of Journalism in Chennai. Post that I did my master's in journalism from Cardiff University, UK. And then I have been into journalism. Mm-hmm. I've also done my postgraduate diploma in counseling skills. And why I did that, probably through the interview, you will know it. But this has been my academic background.
Nice, wonderful. Moving on, what is Point Blank 7? And what is the motto of your initiative? And what is PB7, if you can elaborate?
So PB7 was started out of passion, mm-hmm. for journalism. And when I started PB7, my only motto was to get people involved and keep them informed. Right. So that was what the idea was behind PB7. And initially when I was actually, like I told you, I got into journalism much later because I wanted to do it at some point of time in my life. I loved writing. I loved people. I loved talking to people. I loved stories. And that's how PB7 came into picture. However, when I started working in the mainstream media, I realized that the reality is very different than what it seems in the media. You know, from the outside, we have a very rosy picture of what media is, what people do in it. You know, I always imagined media to, you know, a journalist who walks into any party with a Prada handbag and, you know, we are big shots in a party and things like that. But yes, when I actually got into it, the entire idea of media changed. I realized that where it started from was when I was doing stories. I did a lot of stories on technology, on human interest. And when I was doing these stories, there were instances where my editor told me not to carry some stories because there was it was controversial or it would affect advertisements in the, you know, the media house that I was working for. And that was my spark.
Okay.
That is what I said, you know, if I as a journalist, am not allowed to speak what requires to be spoken about, then what's the point? Why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's when I questioned myself and said, is this really what I want to do? I said, and the answer was absolutely no. And do I need to be in control of things that I write, or do I want others to be in control of what I write?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what started my, that was a spark for Point Blank 7, where I said we need a platform which, you know, goes beyond these external influences, which talks of alternative views and commentaries on issues, of issues that, you know, are not covered in the mainstream media, that often they get ignored, they get killed in the mainstream media because of various reasons. Mm. And news and views which, and I wanted to focus more around views and commentaries and stories rather than just news. So I wanted to set up something which is independent of any kind of establishment, independent of authorities, independent to question who I want, put people, public intellectuals under scrutiny, independent of biases, weaknesses that media experiences all the time in every issue. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to set up something which is purely honest, okay, independent, and truthful, and covers things that need to be told to people.
Okay, wonderful reason behind starting PB7. Nice. What was the reason of the name PB7?
So if you look at it, this is a question I get asked very often. Point blank is when we shoot people.
Yeah, in shooting movies, we hear that, yeah.
Yeah, so I wanted to say things straight up front on your face, truth that you want to hear. My platform is going to speak to you truthfully, straight, upfront, on your face, things that you need to hear, honestly and transparently. So we're going to do it point blank range. And seven became, so for me, seven is a very universal number, you know. So it for me, it denotes perfection and completeness.
Mm-hmm.
So when I said seven, one could look at it like 7 days a week, seven colors of the rainbow, seven colors of life, seven rhythms of life. That we, everything that you look has the number seven in it. And and seven also signifies something called seeker of truth and wisdom.
Okay.
That is where I put the number, that we are going to do it point blank, but we are going to stick to our values of, you know, truth, wisdom, and knowledge.
Okay, wonderful reason there. Nice. So, Riti, you are a mix of an engineer, then journalism, and now you are also heading, I guess, training and coaching in Indian Leadership Academy. So, can you talk about that, and how do you maintain these multiple things, handling the transition between these two multiple roles?
So, Ashok, when I started off, and I'll tell you how this mix actually helps me. In my, whatever I do every day. So as an engineer, I wanted to pursue a passion, which is when I got into journalism. I got into writing. However, it was not out of my boredom that I got into journalism. It was just an organic thing where I wanted to do something that I love doing more than engineering. But when I look at the two aspects, a lot of things I learned during engineering, I carried over into journalism. There were a lot of skills I learned. For example, skill of, you know, analysis, skill of, you know, looking at things objectively. So like I was saying, I carried a lot of skills from engineering to journalism. And it was a very, I think, passion-oriented growth that I took. And I took a decision that, you know, if I have to do it, it's not that I pursue engineering part-time, full-time, and parallelly I'm doing something. I took a hard call. I said, I'm going to leave it. And if I have to pursue something I love, let's do it full-time. Right? So that's when I really took time to, at the age of, at a time when people were earning lakhs of rupees, I took a call and I said, I'm going to go start studying now. And, I went and did further education on that. And then I actually got expertise in it. And then I started my second innings. Now, when I was doing journalism, I was doing stories, I was meeting people. I realized that I had a vision, but what happened was I had started looking at people as my stories rather than human beings. So whenever I looked at somebody, I said, you're a very interesting story, but what I missed out on was the person behind that story. And that's when I organically started, talking to people, understanding what their problems was.
Okay.
And when we did, So Point Blank 7 also got into community journalism, which I can discuss a little later. But when I got into community journalism, I started interacting with people a lot more. And I realized that they are not stories. They are people who need to be spoken to. And once you speak to people, you get a lot more, a broader perspective of what you want to write on. And organically, that led to training and coaching, where I started talking to people about their problems, talking to them about how they can handle issues, how we as a platform could help them, solve their issues. So when you say, how do I balance my journalism with my training and coaching, I think it goes hand in hand. And I really never needed to balance it out, because when I'm talking to somebody, for me, everybody is somebody to write about. When I'm talking to somebody, it's either their story or something that they're going through that I need to tackle. So, I've never had to balance both. It's all, both of them have gone together hand in hand for me. Nice. At all times.
Right. So have been into this independent journalism, and now you're talking about the community journalism. I guess it's almost 7.5 years of journey. How was the journey in the initial days, and what are the support you had in the initial? How did you manage the initial phase of it?
So I started Point Blank 7. The seed of Point Blank started in 2013. Somewhere around the end of 2013, when I decided to quit mainstream media. And I took a call, very quick call, and I said, if I have to do it, the time is now. I have to set up something now. So I think I took another 2 months or 3 months to really start it off. And by March 2014, I had launched Point Blank 7. And also at a time, if you remember, 2014 was the time of elections. So I wanted to launch a platform because that was the best time to bring in independent news. And at 2014, if you also remember, there were not many independent news media, online platforms. And it was just picking up, internet was picking up, people were getting more used to reading newspapers and watching channels rather than online media, which was just picking up. It was not as popular as the number of platforms you see now. There's Quint, there's Print, there is, a lot of other things, News Minute. So News Minute and we started almost parallelly together in 2014.
Okay.
Nice.
So you started alone individually, or you had a colleague or someone to form a team?
I started alone. I launched it alone, except I had a team to build my website.
Okay.
And that team was somebody called 366 PyTech. I collaborated with them, again, some of my friends. So we collaborated, and I said, you take care of technology while I take care of news. So initially, when I launched it, first 20 or 30 stories that I launched the website with were all written by me, were all reported by me. Slowly, I think towards the mid of March, I started creating a team of journalists. I got in touch with a few people. There were a few people who volunteered to do it for, out of passion. Initially, I think the biggest challenge for me was getting a buy-in from people on that independent platform that we are talking about. Right. So not many people trusted media at that point of time. And they said, how do we know you're going to be independent? You're going to be as honest as you say you are. So, convincing them, talking to them about it. And the second biggest challenge for me was getting journalists who were in that mindset.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because journalists usually, normal journalists, they are working with a big media house. They are in that mindset of, you file a story in the morning, editor approves it, and we are done with it. There is no thinking that goes, why am I doing this? What is the value behind this story?
Okay. So now how do you filter? It is little different than the mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And now you wanted to actually give more freedom to the journalist. But you are the person who is running behind the scenes. So now how do you manage being in governing and also not governing?
Good story. Right? Good question on that, Ashok. See, I believe in something that when you start something as a passion, you must stick to doing why you started. What was the reason behind why you started? Now, what happens usually with entrepreneurs is that when they get into the business side of things, they forget the passion. Because now they are wanting to make money, they want the business to grow, which is a fair expectation. But for example, if I can tell you, if I had got into the business side of things, that how is Point Blank going to make money, then I would be a normal journalist. Then I would say, do what it takes to make money, and passion flies out of the window. So what I did was I stuck to doing what I love doing, which is journalism. I became the founder editor. I said, I'm going to do the selection of stories, editing. I'm going to help you with sources. I'm going to, help you get stories wherever possible, find stories. I myself went on ground and did a lot of reporting.
Okay.
So I stuck to that. On the business side, yes, I was involved initially. And then I got somebody to, a friend of mine to say that, no, now you look at business because I don't want to do that. If you tell me how, you tell me, of course, there were ideas that we gave as an edit from an editorial point of view that, how can we make money? How can we organize events? How can we actually look at? And, one thing I want to tell you is what I kept away, Point Blank, away from was advertisements. I kept 0.7 away from it. I said,
okay. Yeah, even I couldn't see any much of advertisements there. It's just all only pure stories are there. I was surprised. I mean, how are you managing the funding, or how are you managing revenue generation?
Exactly. So that is one model I thought, and that is the only point I interfered with, financing, where I said, as a vision, I'm not going to keep advertisements. Because my experience with advertisers was, can you publish what we want? Can you remove this because it doesn't speak good about our product or, our values? I said, no. Mm-hmm. So we keep advertising. Okay. And I think we are the only ones who actually did that at that point of time. We were constantly told that, keep advertisers, write some advertorials so you get money. Which was a very common thing that used to happen in the media, happens even now.
Then how do you get the supporting system? I mean, I'm so surprised. Without advertisements, the main starting from blogging or any kind of website, advertisement stands as a primary source of income, right? Revenue. So how do you mitigate that?
So if you see, when we thought about this, I said that, apart from advertisements, what are our sources of revenue for media? And one thing we took up very strongly was media events. Events was a large generator of resources for us, where we said, probably we go to colleges, we train them on journalism techniques, we get paid for it. We organize events which are large scale events. For example, if we had we had an event on women's rights. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now when we organize these events, there we got advertisers, sponsors, right? Most of the time. But however, never attached. So the disclaimer that went with all our events was, we do not attach your name to our platform. We just say that we are themselves organizing an event on women's rights in a certain college or public workshop or whatever. However, you remain away from associating with our platform. You are just a sponsor of that particular event. So our events became a parallel revenue generator for us. And apart from that, we were doing trainings. We were training people on how to write. We were doing communication trainings. Because when I told you, we were doing community journalism, right? So when we did community journalism, we had to train people on how to start writing, how to create audio videos. And people paid us for it. They really wanted to do it. So the idea, Ashok, for me was whoever has attached to us, to Point Blank 7, be it our own employees, journalists, community, are passionate about Point Blank 7. And I think my biggest revenue there was the passion that I could gather people.
Okay, nice. How big is the team now currently on the ground?
So we have now, I've changed the model a little bit. Now it's more running on community. So my core team is about 5 of us.
Okay.
And 5 to 6 of us. And it's always been that way. One looks at the technology part. I look at the editorial. Two of us look at the editorial part of it. And the others are working at the background, finding stories, finding people, interacting with the community. You know, so all our stories are now, it's got such an automatic flow, the process that we have set up, that we get stories every week, almost. Okay. So it's coming. Stories are coming. We are editing. We are taking a call on what to publish, what not to publish. If stories are not worth it, then we tell them that and we make it better. So that's how it works.
Okay. So every week you get the stories, and how often you refresh the site? Is it a daily refresh that happens?
So daily refresh happens only on core news. Right. When it comes to feature stories, when it comes to problem human interest stories, then that takes a little bit of a time. So we make a a content calendar for every week, that what are the stories scheduled for this week. So we do maintain a content calendar which talks of stories in let's say for next 3 weeks, and then we start scheduling them. We start assigning them to people. So what, as a process, what we do is we call out for stories. People reach out to us with those stories, saying that I want to do this. Our team reaches back to them and says, okay, what do you need to cover that story? So either my team does it or they do it, and then my team takes over or, you know, edits it, makes it better, says we need more bites. So the whole process has become so that even if I don't do anything now, I know stories are going to come in.
Okay, yeah. So you have set the gate in a way that it keeps flowing for you. Okay. Yeah. So how long it took time for you to see the actual revenue being getting generated, and you had to do it, or you had to wait for years and years, or you were able to pull up these kind of events at a very early stage with your previous networking and contacts?
Yeah, it took a long time. When I started in 2014, it took a long time to get people to start reading, understanding why we are writing what we are writing, what is the purpose of that writing, and how the biggest thing was, how does this writing actually help people? So that's where people saw value and purpose. And when I think what clicked for us was, initially it did not make revenue because we were doing a very passion-oriented business, and I got a rude shock when I said, now I'm running out of money. I put in my own funds. I was sustainable for about 2 years, 1.5 to 2 years. And then I realized that, you know what, I think now I need to take a call. I'm running out of money. We need to really figure out what's happening. And I had recruited some people. And my biggest point was, the next month I had a salary to pay. And I said, you know what, I don't have that money now. What do we do? And I think everybody goes through this at some point of time. I was, I, I went through it because probably I was not a seasoned entrepreneur. I didn't know. I made a mistake, right? I made mistakes along the way. I was burning cash for the, you know, for the love of getting stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I stopped myself. I said, okay, now I think we need to change our strategy a little bit. If we are not making money, then clearly I cannot just run this business on passion. I have to make value. And that's when we got into community journalism, hyper-local journalism. I said, let's go hyper-local. Why not? Why don't we go to the level of communities in terms of even apartments, right? And why don't we give them news and give them news that they, which will add value to them, you know, by knowing what's happening around them. They may not be interested in national level news. They may not be interested in city level news because they're already getting that. And when I spoke to people, I realized that, you know what, you're covering a certain issue, but that doesn't add value to me. Somebody told me that.
Okay.
You know, you're covering an issue in Sundarbans. You're covering election issues in West Bengal or Uttar Pradesh or Arunachal Pradesh. How is it adding value to me in Bangalore? I don't know. So I said, and I think that was my turning point where I said, okay, now I think we need to change the value of what we are doing, keeping what we started off with. And that's when we also got into this, like I said, hyper-local journalism. And
that sounds new to me. I'm not aware of it. So if you can elaborate on how are you managing this hyper-local journalism and how you are able to impact the masses? Because these two are two different spectrums, right?
Yes.
Either you go for masses with the generic news. When you go for hyper-local, it's a very small community.
Yes.
So how are you tackling it?
So, you know, there was a platform we set up called WhatsApp as a part of Point Blank 7 itself. And we said this particular web page or platform is going to only work on hyperlocal news, which means probably if I talk of Bangalore, I come to Whitefield. What is happening within Whitefield? What are the issues within Whitefield? Are there roads? Are there no roads? What is the now? What happened in WhatsApp was my stakeholders of WhatsApp were my community people. This other stakeholder was the people, the MPs, the MLAs of, let's say, that particular area, volunteer groups within that area, those who are working on social issues, and general public who are facing these issues. Apart from, let's say, if I am talking of Whitefield, then there were a lot of apartment associations, there were company associations, which were, so all these became my stakeholders.
Okay.
And I said, you know, if people have to know what's happening in Whitefield, all these stakeholders have to be brought onto a platform. Right? Now, so for example, if there is something happening within Whitefield, there is a problem somebody is facing, say, water issue somewhere. Now, I'm going to get that story out for you on my platform, and I'm going to make the local MLA or MP or corporator accountable for that. So he has to come and reply to you as to why there has been no water in this area for so long.
So you're addressing the actual issues then. You're not only covering as a reporter or journalism, but you're taking it to the action.
No, it actually became, and that's where I said, you know, when I thought of what value we are adding apart from just covering news, I thought, you know, hyper-local journalism works best for us.
Okay. Any challenges you faced in these things? Because you're getting into the next level of reporting, right? Apart from covering the stories, you wanted to take action as well. So,
yes.
Yeah. So what are the challenges you faced? Any instances?
Lots of challenges. People refused to come up and speak. They did not want their names there. The corporators, MPs, MLAs, you know, did not function the way we wanted them to function. I don't want to go into but then the biggest challenge was making people accountable and answerable. That was the biggest challenge. Somebody wrote a problem, let's say somebody wrote of some water issue as an example, or somebody wrote of, I think the biggest issue was the Varthur Lake issue, if you know. And when we started talking about it, the biggest challenge was people were facing a problem. There was frothing happening. There was a lot of things happening there. The lake is now closed. It's dead and gone. They're trying to restore it. But at that point of time, there was so much politics around that lake that when we asked the corporator and the MPs, you know, why don't you do something about it? Why don't you put a cover or a netting? Because during rainy season, the froth was actually, poisonous froth was flying out. They said, you know, they got into politics of it's not our responsibility. It's, you know, BBMP's responsibility. When we went to BBMP, BBMP said it's not our responsibility. It's Lake Development Authority's responsibility. When we went to Lake Development Authority, they said, what can we do? People, it's, you know, the companies are putting chemicals into it. What can we do about it? So you see the whole cycle, each one blaming the other, the blame, when the blame mindset came in, it became a big challenge for us, because then we, you know, it blurred the line between us being reporters and us being social activists.
True. You know? So you're completely into your different shoes now.
No, so I did not want to be a social activist. I said, I'm not an activist. I am a journalist. And I will keep that in mind. If you tell me it's not your responsibility, I'm going to report it.
Okay.
Right? If you tell me Lake Development is blaming somebody else, I will find out why you're blaming and I will report your blame. You know, I'm not going to go around and so ultimately, that was a challenge for us, where at some point we said, I know the issues, but should we start solving those issues? Maybe not. My biggest contribution would be if I can write about those issues, if I can mobilize people and empower people to solve those issues through my report.
Okay. Yeah, so definitely you must be needing support outside of your family. Anyhow, core part of your support family comes along. So apart from that, how did you sail through those issues in those challenging periods?
It was difficult, Ashok. But what is nice is when you mobilize people, when you tell them why they need to handle issues around them themselves. And, you know, the biggest thing, even as a trainer or a coach or a journalist, I always believe all the solutions are within us.
Okay.
It's just that we need somebody to show us the problem and to show, you know, resolve that confusion in our mind.
Okay.
So when my team or I used to write stories around when we were doing hyperlocal coverage, I told my team, I was very clear that write stories in a way which brings out the challenge, which brings out the issue, which brings out, you know, who's saying what about the issue, but don't give a solution as a journalist. Mm-hmm. You let people figure out what could be the solution. So when we were covering a lot of issues, people used to write to us, you know. Now, they used to write to us saying that, now I understand what you have written. We understand the challenges that you have, you know, let us know. I think that we should approach this person, or I think this should be the solution to this problem.
Okay.
So when people came up with their own solutions, people, stakeholders became more accountable to that.
Okay.
And I think when that accountability comes in, action happens.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah. So you just mentioned that people are writing back to you. So that is that the only way of knowing how many people are responding to you, or how do you pull out a general statistics or the analytics from the data, because you are online, it's in website. So how do you get to know that there is a good recipients from whatever you are putting into the media?
So our Point Blank 7 as a website is still there. It's there as a platform. But, you know, Ashok, a lot of our communication and work happens on ground, as in when we talk to people, when we go. So I have these two, three people who actually go to people and ask them, you know, that, you know, so we came up with this idea of creating hyperlocal worksheets, where we gave people a worksheet, and a worksheet as in, I would say it would be a news sheet, I call it worksheet internally, but it would be a note sheet where we went and gave people in Whitefield that, you know, these are the problems that we are facing currently. My team wrote down it is like a whole
list of issues,
or I would say it is more of when you read those 2-page or 3-page things, right? Newsletters, sort of things. So we created something like that, and we said,
okay,
this is what we are facing, this is what we have analyzed. Now, what do you think? So people actually take time to read it. They say, okay, I'll get back to you. But somewhere, I think when you start collaborating with people, people actually got back to us, coming down and meeting us. Actually, they said, we want to. So there were some citizen groups who said, we want to meet you and sit down with you and see how we can do this. And moreover, it was not, our collaboration was not about us working with them to solve the issue. Our collaboration with them was us giving them information about the issue. So that is something I'm very, very clear about, even with my team, that we are not activists. We are not problem solvers. We are people who, so, you know, who give you information. Some MP is not getting involved in the issue. It's my responsibility as a journalist to go question him. Right? That why aren't you doing it? What's the problem? What is your challenge? You are a public person, you know, you're answerable. So when I started off, I told you that this, that was the value of Point Blank 7, questioning public intellectuals. And I still stick by that. So our job is to give you information.
Okay.
Now, how citizen groups choose to work on it, they want to go represent themselves to the MP or corporator, that's their problem.
Mm.
You find your own solution.
True, true. Yeah, so in a way, people will get attracted to what is the issue that they are going on, and they wanted to get more information about their local what is happening, right? Okay, yeah. Are you only in Bangalore, or you have expanded beyond the city limits?
So our plan was to go beyond. We are in Bangalore currently, and we were. At some point of time, we had gone beyond Bangalore. We had gone to places like Hubli. Hubli was there. Tumkur was there, because that's within the range of our area. So that was the next thing, because I have my focus has always been this city when it comes to hyperlocal. So I have not gone beyond Karnataka or beyond Bangalore anywhere.
Okay.
Because when we talk of hyperlocal journalism, and when we started talking of hyperlocal journalism, I divided Bangalore into so many wards. We said there are so many wards in Bangalore. There's so many issues that we'll spend a lifetime doing this, you know. So let's just focus on one city, because Bangalore and even now it's one of the most sought after city. So why not? Of course. Of course, now when we go into other cities, if we do think of going, I did think of going to Delhi and Gurgaon, because I was there for a bit. But the issues there are very different. That will require a very different perspective. And
okay, that's nice. And how you track the adoption among people, and how you gather analytics around it for any business to actually get the data or insights out of it? We should always know that how well I am growing. So how do you track those things?
How do I track those things? A few factors are, of course, all that analytics that happens on the website, how many people are visiting, how many are commenting, all those engagements online. But for me, what was important is how are people engaging with me offline also, right? How are they engaging with my team offline? How much are they engaging with my events when I do it online or offline? How many people are actually sending in stories? For me, that is a big factor of analysis, because if that stops, then I know people are not seeing value. But that has not stopped yet. You know, people are still engaging. People are still wanting to talk. People are still wanting to bring up issues that they have, which means they see a platform where they're able to do this.
Yeah, so you are able to see the scalability within, though it is a niche a city-based journalism independent community, you're seeing the scale within this limit itself.
So when it comes to hyper-local journalism, it's only within Bangalore. But if you look at the stories on Point Blank, it's all over India. Whether we covered, elections. So if you look at it, the umbrella is anywhere in India. In fact, we had stories from Pakistan, South Africa, a lot of stories which came in. People who were doing community journalism there in South Africa connected with us and said, you know, we do community journalism here, but we want ourselves heard in India. So why don't we collaborate?
Okay.
There was a group in Pakistan who said, you know, we do community journalism here, but we don't have a platform in India. So they collaborated with us.
Okay.
There was a women's group, feature service, which, they said, we write stories on women, but we don't know. We send it out to everybody. We send it out to the mainstream media, but we really want a targeted force where we can publish these stories. So they collaborated with us.
Okay.
Right.
That's nice.
So we had, and that's one another revenue generation model that I can talk about. We had a lot of such collaborations. You know, groups are collaborating with us, which means that they were sharing revenue with us.
Oh, okay, that's nice. Yeah, the hyperlocal helping another hyperlocal community.
Yeah, hyperlocal, maybe even country level hyperlocal, collaborating with India, and they were doing revenue sharing with us. So they have journalists there, those journalists write for us in India. Right. And of course, we do pay them for it. But when we carry their stories, they also do their revenue sharing. That, okay, how many views are generated, we will share revenue. Now, those guys had ads running for them. So their revenue was sorted. So they could do revenue sharing with us. So a lot of these models, which Ashok, I explored, are very new. And they have not been considered. Usually, if you see these media websites, they keep asking for donation. Please donate.
Okay.
We are, so I have never got into that. I said, no, let's not go into that mode of donations and things like that.
Okay, you're strong in your principle and how you want to run it.
Very, very
strong. Nice. Nice. So what was the first moment of relief after starting PB7?
How do you define relief? I don't know. I still don't have relief.
Yeah. You had any target number in mind to see that a number of views should reach, or you wanted to cover a great story. So what was your moment of relief that you consider, started makes sense?
So number of people who want to read, I had no target. But I think within 6 months, we were easily about a footfall of maybe a lakh.
Okay. Nice. So how long it took for you to reach that?
About 6 to 7 months.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that was during election time. So that was a good time.
Okay. Time matters. Yeah.
Yeah. So strategic time when you want. And I think for entrepreneurs, that's very important that you decide at what time you want to actually get into the business. Are you lagging behind? There are strategic points where you think that, okay, now is the right time for me to take this particular step. And for me, elections was the right time because I said, people want to know information. People want to know. People are so passionate about elections in India,
Yeah.
People who are contesting are so looking out for platforms to talk.
True.
Right. So this is the right time. And I launched it within a few months. I said, I have to do this. Yeah. So it came to me very good and quickly. However, another point for me was when I think in 2015, we won the Laadli Media Award for advertising gender sensitivity.
Oh, nice.
For one of our stories. So we had covered a story, Siddharth was the reporter, he had covered a story on the transgenders of Manipur.
Okay.
And it was a photo feature story. And Laadli Media Awards is not easily given. So I
Okay.
that was a moment for me, which was my first award as a platform. And
Okay,
it was
wonderful.
a community story, which was the best part. So that was a good feeling for me. The other good feeling was, I think, my first collaboration with an international media institute, where
Okay.
it was called Project Syndicate. And they go through people, platforms that they can collaborate with. They have certain criteria that they collaborate with. So when my first collaboration came, that was a moment of achievement for me. When I saw my citizen reporting, you know, I was almost getting 5 to 10 stories per every 2 days. So which means 5 stories a day. So for me, that was a good start.
Okay.
Because people don't report things very easily.
Yeah, inflow is stable. Yeah.
Yeah, inflow started. I mean, it didn't start very well, but it took on, which means people were seeing value in my business.
Okay, okay. Response is more. Yeah, that matters.
Yeah. So that was
okay,
a
good.
Moment of achievement.
Nice. Okay, yes, yes. That was a good moment for both the awards and also the Project Syndicate collaborations. Wonderful. Can you talk about your marketing and sales strategy which has worked for you and how you are able to fuel your business and able to sustain? Which formula has worked for you?
My marketing strategy was, again, like I said, value-driven. It was more of value-driven. Sales strategy, I think what worked was the hyper-local aspect to it. That was the only point where I saw sales working for us.
Okay.
Otherwise, sales were not working for us because we were online. We are a more mission-driven platform. You know, so sales actually worked for us. Now, there were people who told us that, for example, if I'm covering a story about a woman who's making some goods or products somewhere in India, somewhere in some remote area. So they said, why don't you start selling or offering those products? So that was the sales strategy that someone told us, but you know me, so I refused. I said, no, again, we are just information based. So sales strategy as such, I never had one, Ashok, but because we are a different business altogether, we are a media business. And the only sales strategy we had was getting people attend our events.
Yeah,
events.
True.
Right. Now, how do we do that? Yes, I had a sales team. I had marketing collaterals made for our events. We had sales team who used to call up people, who used to talk to them, who used to call up corporations and collaborate with them, saying that, you know, we're having this event. What is the value of this event? How are you going to benefit out of it? Probably when we did events in colleges, then we used to offer them some, you know, trainings. We used to offer them some workshops. We used to offer, for example, if we went to a journalism college and we did something, we said, okay, you know, we are a journalistic platform. We are journalists. So we are going to do, say, a 1 month long workshop for your students on how to do blogging or audio podcasting or, you know, writing stories or reporting stories, sources, how to find sources. So we did things like that. We did workshops. We did a lot of communication trainings, which my sales team was very strong at selling because we were journalists. We were creating journalists in the community. And that was the biggest selling point. And when we spoke to people, our only strategy was, we are not going to make journalists out of you. We are going to make you good communicators.
Okay. Yeah.
Now,
much required skills for college students, right? Much required skills.
Yeah, students or even corporates for that matter. So our sales strategy with students was this, that we're going to make you good communicators.
Mm-hmm.
You can start writing. Our strategy with the corporates was more about, you know, finding more technology oriented. For example, hyperlocal. If we want a platform which is hyperlocal based, How can, let's say, an IT company work with us to make that platform better? That was our strategy with them. So, talk to them about our hyperlocal platform, what is the technology behind it, how it has been built, how we can better it, so can we collaborate, or things like that. So, okay. we used to have partnership selling where we used to say, why don't you build a small app for, let's say, Rajaji Nagar? Just do hyperlocal journalism in Rajaji Nagar, add some features, who are the corporators, who are the MPs, MLAs. So we used to talk to them on those terms. And a few of them did convert for us.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah.
So our strategy used to be different for each stakeholder. When we used to go to MPs and MLAs, our strategy used to be different, where we had to get them to register on our platform as stakeholders. And then, for a small sum of money, they used to register and become a more membership model that we followed. That if you have to be on our platform, you have to be a member of our platform. But membership not for the public. Membership only for the stakeholders.
Okay.
Because what used to work, elections are coming, corporator elections are coming, municipal elections are coming. They want to be closely connected to the public. And so this became one platform where they used to say, for the next 3 months, I'm going to take membership and I'm going to listen to all the issues and respond to all the issues. So strategy used to change. I think what was important here is identifying. There could be no one strategy for everybody.
True. That's very insightful, actually. You're member-based and also bringing in the people who are authoritative and who are in charge of it. Wonderful insight. Moving on to the mistakes and the corrections, any instances you have that you made mistakes and you had a lot of learning from it, which you value even now?
I did make a lot of mistakes. Some of the few mistakes, if I had to broadly say it, I made a few mistakes in hiring people who were not in alignment with my vision or goal. Now, one can say I can bring them in alignment with my vision, but it really doesn't work that way. I mean, if someone doesn't believe in your cause, they're going to work in what they believe in, and your business is not going to work that way, because ours was a vision, mission-oriented business. Mm-hmm. And that is one mistake I made, only because probably they were known to me. I thought that, we'll have a better understanding with each other.
Okay.
But they were not aligned. They were not aligned. And that is one mistake every entrepreneur should watch out for. That when you get people who are in alignment with your vision for this business.
Yeah, that's informative. Nice. There are a lot of things on your shoulder, right? Being into independent journalist, getting into community, and you're also coaching and mentoring many other people. So how do you maintain your personal time and how are you balancing it, work and personal?
Yeah, okay. So what I do here is very difficult, Ashok. Frankly, for an entrepreneur, you tend to work probably 20 hours a day. And in those 4 hours that you're sleeping, you're thinking of what to do next. So personal time is something which I realized. So when I was working at Point Blank 7, now when I'm working with training and coaching, you're never going to make time. You have to find time. You have to make it for yourself. So now what I have started doing is I have started... when I start my day, I make a list of the operational tasks that I have to do. Let's say finding stories, editing stories, putting them in the pipeline. All that's operational. And then I divide my task into strategy work. Okay. That I have 5 things to do which are operational, 5 things to do which are strategy today. I'm going to spend next 2 hours doing operational work and be done with it. And I'm going to spend next 3-4 hours doing only strategy work, which means I'm not thinking of anything. I tell people, please don't enter the room. Don't disturb me with anything operational when I'm doing these 4 or 5 hours of strategy work. Strategy means, you know, either working on something, writing something, training and coaching, talking to people, really thinking about what kind of stories I want, what kind of trainings I want to do, what kind of events I want to do. So all that is comes as a part of strategy. Maybe even talking to your team about what to do to for today, what to do next for the company. So I have started now making this very clear distinction that don't mix my day with strategy and operation. Okay. I'm going to divide my days into these slots. And when I'm doing strategy, I'm doing only strategy. When I'm doing training, I'm doing training. And then I have a personal time where everything shuts down. And then I'm working on my personal time, which means like no operations, nothing. Yeah. I'm just probably playing with my dog or sitting with my spouse or whatever it is, you know. So, I switch off my phone, WhatsApp, and I say, okay, here I am just going to do this. And I think this is very important to box this for ourselves when we are doing so many things.
True. Nice. Wonderful. Yes, that was very informative. Moving on to the next segment of this episode, rapid fire questions. Let me bring it on.
Sure.
What is your favorite book that you have read recently and which one you would like to share?
I've read this book called An Uncertain Glory.
Okay.
And it talks about India and its contradictions.
Oh, okay.
And this is a book by John Ray and Amartya Sen.
Okay.
So I'm currently reading that book. That's something which I recommend to all. For journalists, I'd like to recommend this book called Breaking News.
Okay.
It's a book by Kamala Manekar.
Okay. And, wonderful suggestions. What does creativity mean to you in one sentence?
Creativity for me means the ability to empathize. When you are able to empathize with somebody, or empathize in the situation that you are in, all your creativity comes together to find a solution. Understanding what the other person needs is creativity for me.
Okay. Nice way of putting. Good. What time you go to sleep and what time you wake up and how does your first few hours of morning look like?
I sleep at around... Earlier, I used to sleep at around 11:30, 12. I am more of a night person, Ashok, so I tend to work at night. But yes, I'm trying to bring back my schedule. So I sleep around 11:30 and I get up by around 6.
Okay.
And my first schedule is having a conversation with my dog.
Nice.
Okay. And I go for a run. That's my schedule. I come back, do my meditation, and then I'm set for the day.
Okay, nice, wonderful. What's your favorite subject in school?
Oh, wow. English.
Okay. And the tough one?
Physics.
Okay. Who's your mentor? And second part of that question is, how do you make sure that your mentors are available to you when you need them the most?
So I have quite a few mentors in this different industries that I have worked in. On the technology side, when I started for my first job, my mentor has been Pony, and she was my manager at Nokia. My second and my biggest mentor of my life has been Mr. Ratan Thakur Grant. He was my theater teacher. And he is still there. He is still very much in, we are in touch, although we keep losing touch in between. But what stays with me, and when you ask me, how do I ensure that they are available to me? Ratan Thakur Grant has actually taught me the values. So they always remain with me. He taught me the value of understanding who I am. He was the first person who identified that I'm a good writer.
Oh, okay.
He was the first person to tell me that your writing is worth it. you know. And he actually
okay.
Said that in front of probably 1500 people. And I think that
oh.
that remains with me, and that is something that his values remain with me all the time. And anytime I need him, he's always available to talk, for that matter.
Okay, that's a big recognition. Nice. So next question, what's the best thing that happened to you this month?
Interesting question. Well, I think the best thing that happened to me this month was when I was taking a training session, and somebody says that, you know, Riti, you are not a trainer, but I would call you a guru.
Oh, nice. Wonderful feedback for a trainer. Yeah.
I think another best thing that happened to me this month was on Women's Day, when my Point Blank 7 team actually dropped in a message for me and say, said that I am their woman of substance. So that, I think that was the most touching moment for me at that point of time.
Wonderful.
Because they are a part of me. So.
Wonderful. That's nice. I thoroughly enjoyed this whole conversation. Very insightful. A lot of knowledge, and also the differences between being a reporter, journalism, and also a little thin line between the social activist and stuff. Wonderful interacting with you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ashok. It was a pleasure talking to you. Your questions are so great. Very something got me thinking also a lot of time.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Riti.
Thank you so much, Ashok.
Okay, we are at the end of episode number 32. Thank you very much, Riti, for coming on and sharing your experiences. And to our listeners, you can find out the episode summary in the description. Until we catch up soon with more exciting stories, stay tuned, be motivated. Thank you.